This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo Ascaliga.
Time I mon iroctí a yen of chacht ar a chorp, agus súligam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, turmi.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gcúrna meán an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an tálam a gináam gribh orcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tórin gribh an orcháir stán i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Nau ni bhin aon dár dárach sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
As far as I can see, I always want to get in the Irish team. And that should be every young player's dream and ambition in this country. And if you're playing in a place where you're not going to get the opportunities in the big games, that they're the ones that get you picked. They are the ones, the Champions Cup games are the ones that get you picked. You need to be playing in a team and starting in a team for those games. It's as simple as that if you want to play in the Irish team.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on the Indo Daily, what happened to Aoife Johnston?
The 16-year-old from Shannon, County Clare's parents, James and Carol, told of how their daughter had become sick on the 17th of December 2022. Her admission to hospital with suspected meningitis and sepsis.
Even when I knew Aoife was in hospital, like, I thought she was going to be okay. And then the next morning to get a call that she's in ICU, I didn't know what to do. Like, that's my baby sister.
The sepsis management guidelines were not followed on December 17, 2022, leading to a delay in care of 12 hours.
There were no trolleys available for the 16-year-old, her family providing a photograph showing Aoife huddled between two chairs in a blanket just hours before her death.
There was insufficient nursing staff and just one emergency medicine consultant who was on call for the whole weekend.
We brought Aoife where we told her she would be looked after, but she wasn't. The doctors would be here soon, and the doctors never came.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Southern correspondent for the Irish Independent, Ralph Regal, who has spent this week at the inquest into the death of 16-year-old Aoife Johnston. And we're going to ask, why wasn't her life saved? Ralph, you've spent the last few days inside the court in Limerick. Now, it's a coroner's court, so a lot of people mightn't be familiar with what exactly that looks like. We think of courts of law, but it's a little bit different than being in a district court or the High Court. Maybe take us inside the room and describe how it operates.
Surely, yeah. It's a physical courtroom, Kevin, but it's quite different in that a coroner's court is not about apportioning blame. It's effectively about confirming specific circumstances, time, dates, cause of death, and general circumstances. But it's a very different environment. It can be a very fraught environment because obviously emotions are running very high. I mean, you're dealing with death, so it can be very, very emotional. And this one was particularly emotional because for 4 days, people were really, you know, upset and moved and shocked by the circumstances in which a 16-year-old girl died when she shouldn't have died. And the coroner for Limerick is John McNamara. And the inquest was held for 4 days in Kilmallock, not in Limerick City, but actually in Kilmallock. And at the request of the family, there were two framed photographs of Aoife on either side of the bench in front of John McNamara. So every person who gave evidence was basically giving evidence looking at this beautiful 16-year-old girl who died in such appalling circumstances just days before Christmas in December 2022.
Now, we know that the coroner came back. His verdict was medical misadventure. You've said it's not about apportioning blame. So maybe explain to us what that finding actually means.
Yeah, medical misadventure is I think one of the more powerful of the verdicts that can be recorded in the coroner's court. And essentially what it means is the unintended outcome of a medical action. Now, in Aoife's particular case, it was basically the fact that she did not get the treatment she needed in time. The emergency department was horrendously overcrowded. It was described as chaotic. It was described as a war zone. And there was a 15-hour and 15-minute delay in giving Aoife the antibiotics that would have successfully treated the type B meningococcal infection that she had. And, I mean, the implications of it essentially is that it outlines the circumstances, but recommendations can also be added to the verdict. And the recommendations are largely geared towards ensuring that this type of thing never happens again.
We'll go through the timeline of the tragedy in a second, Ralph, but we heard language used, we've seen it in the headlines in the papers from your reporting around the hospital being a debt trap, a war zone, language you don't really expect with a hospital in Limerick, let's be honest. Did the hospital or the HSC challenge any of that sort of evidence that was put forward?
No, they didn't. I mean, for the most part, the evidence went unchallenged. And what was also very interesting, Kevin, is the fact that it was stressed to the coroner by Conor Halpin, senior counsel, who was representing the HSE and University Hospital Limerick at the inquest, that there was no objection or no submissions going to be made to him on the basis of returning a verdict of death by medical misadventure. And it was stressed by Damien Tansey, senior counsel, who was the solicitor for the Johnston family, that the family wanted a verdict of death by medical misadventure.
The evidence, Ralph, over the 4 days, it went into a lot of key areas, investigated a lot of different things, but the reoccurring themes were around overcrowding in the hospital A&E, understaffing, procedures around dealing with sepsis patients not being properly followed, how things are escalated between staff and their superiors. Maybe let's go back to how Aoife Johnson ended up in A&E. She had a referral from an out-of-service GP.
Yeah, that's right. On the morning of December the 17th, 2022, Aoife Johnson got up in the morning. She came downstairs in her pyjamas. She had a chat with her parents. She was a Leaving Cert student living in Shannon in County Clare. She didn't feel quite well. She went back upstairs and she notified her parents around lunchtime that she was beginning to feel very unwell. She had gotten sick. She was complaining of feeling lightheaded, nausea. And her father, James, and her mother, Carol, took it very seriously. So they organised an emergency appointment with a GP in Shannondock. And that appointment took place between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. And in fairness to the GP, he spent a good bit of time with Aoife and he was quite concerned. The family went to great pains to pay tribute to him because he suspected sepsis. And he told James, who had brought Aoife to the appointment, don't go home, go straight to University Hospital Limerick. And he gave James a letter which outlined the fact that Aoife was sepsis query. In other words, it was suspected that she had sepsis, which is a very serious infection which requires urgent and prompt treatment. And he said, give that to the staff in the emergency department to make sure that Aoife gets urgent care. James immediately brought his daughter to University Hospital Limerick's emergency department. And they arrived at 5:40 p.m. The letter was handed in, and unfortunately, that began what the coroner described as a series of systemic failures, communication breakdowns, and in the words of one consultant, that where the emergency department and the healthcare system effectively failed Aoife.
Well, describe as best you can from what the evidence the inquest heard, the scene that met Aoife and her father when they arrived in that A&E department.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, they arrived to what, I mean, a very experienced clinical nurse manager, Catherine Skelly, described as a war zone. Limerick University Hospital, I mean, a little bit of the background, which I think is important, is that as part of a whole restructuring plan about 15 years ago, emergency departments in Nina and in Ennis were phased out, also in St. John's. And University Hospital Limerick effectively became the Category 4 referral hospital for the entire Midwest region. But crucially, it didn't get, in the words of several consultants, it didn't get the support beds that it required. There's a brand new A&E unit there, but it doesn't have the support beds. And what that means is there's a pinch point that you can get a significant buildup of patients in University Hospital Limerick. Now, if you go back over the past 10 years, University Hospital Limerick's emergency department has consistently been the most overcrowded in the state. But that particular weekend of December the 17th and 18th and 19th, things really spiraled to an unprecedented level. Ireland was just coming out of a status red and status yellow ice warning. From about 4 p.m. on December the 17th, there was an increasing flow of patients who had suffered injuries consistent with falls on ice. So you had people with broken ankles, broken legs, broken hips, head injuries. And suddenly the numbers began to surge in the emergency department. To put that in context, the emergency department went from 101 patients to just about 12, 14 hours later to 191 patients. Now, on the evening of December the 17th, there were three doctors on duty, two senior registrars and one senior house officer. And at one point, that single senior house officer was dealing with up to 170 patients on her own in conjunction with nursing staff. Now, the problem was further compounded because they were down staff. This was 1 week before Christmas. There was leave matters being dealt with. There were a number of staff who were ill. There were a number of staff who couldn't get to the hospital because of the travelling conditions. They were down 21 staff across the hospital. And crucially, they were down five staff in the emergency department itself. And Catherine Skelly, in outlining what it was like, she said it was chaotic. She said it was unsafe. She was so concerned, she immediately alerted her line managers and other doctors on the basis that she needed support. She felt the staff in the emergency department, there was a threat that they were going to be overwhelmed and they desperately needed extra support. The consequences of that weekend meant that Nurse Skelly, a very experienced emergency department nurse, she never worked in the emergency department again. She said the circumstances that weekend, the stress of the overcrowding and the circumstances of Aoife's death left her personally and professionally broken.
Ralph, I've known and read much about UHL for years at this stage. I'm struggling to comprehend the idea that one senior house officer had 170 patients to deal with in an evening. I'm actually struggling to get my head around that.
Yeah, and I mean, the actual, what patients were going through is even worse on the basis that there were trolleys in front of toilets. There were seven berths in the resuscitation room. There were 14 patients in the resuscitation room. When Aoife Johnston was eventually triaged at 7:15 p.m. and was put in the emergency department, they didn't even have a trolley to give her. According to her parents, James and Carol, she was placed in a room that resembled a storage room just off the emergency department. She was in pain, she was crying, she was screaming. And in a desperate bid to try and make their daughter more comfortable, they had to push two chairs together to try and make a makeshift bed for the teenager. And such was her distress and her vocal distress that other patients on trolleys in the emergency department started saying, "For God's sake, can someone not do something to help that little girl?"
Timing was a big factor in the inquest, Ralph, because what has come out is that she could have been saved. She could be well, she could be in school today as we're sitting here talking about her. Explain how her time in A&E played out.
Yeah, the timeline really is grim and stark for Aoife. She arrived at the A&E at 5:40 p.m. She was triaged at 7:15 p.m. The GP's letter, which warned of sepsis or potential sepsis, was handed in. But Aoife was not seen by a doctor for 12 hours. Aoife wasn't seen by a doctor until 6 a.m. in the morning when senior house officer Dr. Leandri Card, she was so concerned for Aoife's parents and their distress that she bumped Aoife 12 places up the list. Aoife was 12th on the assessment list. She bumped Aoife up to the top. She went in and she realized that Aoife potentially had meningitis. Dr. Card immediately prescribed antibiotics, but yet in yet another appalling instance, it was an hour and a quarter before those antibiotics were prescribed. Now, the inquest heard very detailed evidence from consultant microbiologist Dr. Patrick Stapleton. He did a lot of the blood work afterwards, and he confirmed that Aoife, in fact, had type B meningococcal infection. But that infection is readily treatable by targeted antibiotics. So had she got the antibiotics when she should have, Dr. Staples said she most likely would have had a different and an optimal outcome. But I think it's really stark when you realize from his evidence that for every 2 hour delay in giving the antibiotics, Aoife's mortality risk doubled. So by the time she actually got the antibiotics at 7:15 on the morning of December the 18th, it was far too late.
There are some recommendations, Ralph, on the back of the evidence heard and the finding by the coroner. What is the fallout from this from a medical point of view for the HSE, for UHL, indeed for the Minister for Health and the government?
I think the fallout is as serious as it possibly can be. I mean, you have a senior medical consultant describing an emergency department as a death trap. And I think what's very important to stress is he didn't just admit it was a death trap in December 2022. He said it was a death trap today, given the levels of overcrowding. He said it remains dangerous. To tackle the overcrowding in Limerick, Dr. James Gray said, would require 300 additional beds. Now, Limerick is going to get 96 new beds in a unit next year. I think that's the second quarter of 2025. But it isn't going to get another 96 beds until 2028. And Dr. Gray warned that is a very long time to wait. Now, the consequences, I think, for the Department of Health and the HSE and University Hospital Limerick are quite significant on the basis that people are beginning to fear going to University Hospital Limerick's emergency department. I mean, Aoife Johnson's inquest, as horrific and as harrowing as it is not the first inquest that we've dealt with over recent times where people have died because of issues surrounding the emergency department. Just last month, Martin Abbott, who also comes from Shannon and County Clare, he was a 65-year-old man. He was found lying on the floor of a trolley, beside a trolley, in the emergency department. And when the registrar attempted to put a resuscitation tube into his mouth, he couldn't do it on the basis that Mr. Abbott, rigor mortis had already set in. So, I mean, things like that. I mean, the Midwest Patient Support Group has said that people actually are in fear of going to University Hospital Limerick because of understaffing, because of overcrowding, and because of the unbelievable stress that's being put on doctors and nurses.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, Ralph, as well, that Limerick is our only major city that doesn't have some form of a private hospital. Galway, Cork, Dublin all have some form of a private hospital, but Limerick doesn't. So people are so reliant on UHL when they need help for medical problems. But maybe, Ralph, to finish, going back to all of this, is a 16-year-old girl, Aoife Johnson. You spoke to her family on the fringes of the inquest. They spoke so strongly outside afterwards about their little girl, the cool kid. Maybe just finish out by telling us about Aoife herself.
Yeah, I think it's important to say as well, I mean, Damien Tansey, the solicitor for the family, he made a point at the end of the inquest in his submissions to John McNamara, the coroner, of talking about the courage and the dignity of this family. And I mean, any person who has a child, I mean, it is every parent's worst nightmare. You do everything right, and unfortunately, you lose a child in circumstances where you know they should have been saved. This shouldn't have happened. As the Johnson family said, they shouldn't have been before the coroner yesterday because Aoife should still be alive. And Carol spoke very movingly. I mean, the family spoke to the media. Now, we were chatting to them over the 4 days inside the inquest, but they spoke to the collected media outside the courthouse. And all of them were fighting back tears. I mean, it was a very emotionally charged interview with the family. Carol pointed out, she said, you know, we don't want our daughter to be remembered as the girl who died on the trolley. I mean, she was a 16-year-old girl. She was bright. She was bubbly. Her father used to refer to her as the cool kid. But he said also she was my baby girl. I mean, Megan and Kate, her two older sisters, they spoke very movingly about a girl who loved fashion, who was very close to her sisters, who was, you know, Aoife's boyfriend was there. He was very upset. And Megan spoke incredibly eloquently about what they were robbed of. They were robbed of seeing Aoife do her leaving cert. They were robbed of seeing Aoife go through her graduation and of building her future life. They won't see any of those things. And I mean, here was a girl, bright, bubbly. I think if you look at the images of Aoife, if you look at the beautiful portraits that were brought before the coroner's inquest to illustrate the type of girl, I mean, she could have been anyone's daughter. I mean, she had her whole life in front of her, a bright, glowing future. And she, in her mother's own words, she said she had a terrible death. She had a horrible death. She suffered in a place where her parents had consistently and repeatedly told her that night, you're in the right place. You're in the place where you're going to get help. And sadly, tragically and fatally, she didn't get that help.
Ralph Regal, thank you very much. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced and researched by Garrett Mulhall, with sound design by Rory Bowens. You can read more of Ralph's reporting on that inquest in the Irish Independent online and in print. Archive clips were from RTE's 6-1 News, Virgin Media News and the Irish Independent. And remember, if you like the Indo Daily, don't forget to follow the podcast and leave us a comment. We're offering Indo Daily listeners 50% off an Irish Independent digital subscription. Head over to independent.ie/redeem to sign up for unlimited access to premium content, e-paper, puzzles and more. Just enter the code INDO, that's I-N-D-O, to receive 50% off your subscription. Stay informed and engage. Subscribe today.